Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paulistic Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of politics and law that you watch me cover on television every day into the world of theater and the arts. And it, of course, is such a passion of mine. And sometimes the things that happen in theater, well, crosses paths with what is going on in the worlds of law and politics. You'll understand some of that more as we enter a world of just an exciting theater that I should have been talking about a lot earlier than this. But better late than never. It's the Invictus Theater Company, and it is run by its founding artistic director, Charles Askenizer. And Charles, thanks for joining me. A founding artistic director, this is your baby.
Yes, yeah, very much. We are going into our eighth year of existence now, thriving in our eighth year.
Yeah, well, you started in 2017. And by the way, I also want to say up front, because for people that you actually have a new home now.
We do, yes. There was a fire at our old venue over on Thorndale, the Reginald Vaughn Theater, and we were displaced, and we were looking for a new home to produce our shows in, and we got in touch with Amy Rubenstein, who's the owner of the Windy City Playhouse, and she was very generous and very accommodating, and we were able to move in there, and we've loved it. So we moved in January of this year.
And I always love Windy City Playhouse. And so when I saw you there, it just kind of melded over my mind to say, okay, more great theater is coming up. She did a lot of immersive theater. And of course, that space allows you to do it. There's a bar, a really comfortable seating area. You can kind of hang around. And most importantly, there's a nice Italian restaurant just down the street. So that, have you eaten there yet?
I have. It's wonderful. Buona Terra. I hope I'm saying it right, but so forgive me.
I don't
me.
Know either, but I just know you go out, yeah. take a turn to the right, and pretty soon you're having really nice pizza. So
yeah.
Lots going for you over on Irving Park at the old Windy City Playhouse, now the home of the Invictus Theater. I also want people to, we're going to talk about, you know, the shows going on there. By the way, let me just preview the fact that we're going to talk about Network, as in the famous, I'm as mad as hell and I can't take it anymore movie. That's going to be coming up fairly soon in August for you guys, along with other shows before and after. But I want to talk about the mission of the Invictus Theater. When you and others founded this back in 2017, you actually had a pretty important message about diversity and about addressing issues of the day.
Yeah, I think one of the – so our focus is works of heightened language and empowering our communities with works of heightened language. And I think it's so, so important because there's so much in the nuance of our experiences that goes unshared or unsaid because we don't have the words for it. And we're behind texts and tweets and screens all day. And I think heightened language demands that we be vulnerable and be open and communicate. And so what I think it does is it bridges the gaps between groups of people and it gives words to the wordless. And I think once we bridge those gaps, then conversations can be had and people feel less alone and feel more a part of the world and a part of the community in a very active, positive way. So
let me just save people the trouble of having to go to the Google. When you say heightened language, I think people get a sense of what you mean, but I'll have you define it.
Sure. Poetry. Poetry is so poetic language. Usually in Shakespeare is the best example. Sometimes there's direct language like go over there or how are you doing? And then sometimes there's heightened language like
thou art walking over to thine area of thine.
Exactly. And it's more detailed. And some people will say flowery, but I think it's got more nuance to it and more expression to it than just, you know, walk over there and grab a pizza. So, yeah.
Although next time I walk to the pizza after a show, I'm going to do it in that Shakespearean way.
Yeah.
And by the way, your background as well, I mean, this is not your first theater endeavor. You've got some nice credentials and experiences behind you that let you sort of bring your mission now to fruition. But talk a little bit about your background.
Yeah, well, I came to Chicago in 2010, and I found Shakespeare to be so incredibly transformative. And I wanted to share that with people. And I actually, for a while, was also a yoga teacher as well, too. And one of our programs...
It kind of goes together when you think about it.
It does. I mean, breath work, being open and available in your body. And one of our programs, Shakespeare in the Courts, which is actually kind of transformed a bit now to our partnership with Lawrence Hall, It's where we do Shakespeare with youth in the Cook County probation system. And now with Lawrence Hall, it's with traumatized youth. We actually just this morning finished our production with them for the summer. And we do an abridged Shakespeare production with those youth. And we found it to be incredibly powerful and incredibly rewarding. It's challenging. I mean, these demographics that we're working with have experienced so much pain and trauma and loneliness and isolation. And but we found that when given the words and given the opportunity to create, just absolute beautiful magic happens. And I think healing can happen too. So yeah, so I'm very passionate about sharing language with the community. And of course, we have our main stage programming as well too. So
we'll talk about that as well. But by the way, this is just, I mean, the Lawrence Hall Community-Based Service Agency, I mean, that's just one of the entities you're working with. So it is about giving back to the community. But I thought it was interesting too, when I was, because you have Shakespeare in the Court, Shakespeare in the Classroom and all that. But with regard to the courts, one of the things I read was that that some of the people, it looks like these are at-risk youth who may have been in trouble that you're involving, because you sort of talk about attending these events may be people from the court system, whatever. So that would suggest to me that these folks have perhaps had some trouble in the system.
Oh, absolutely. I think our first or second year, we were doing Romeo and Juliet. And especially in Shakespeare in the Courts, it's all youth that are involved with the juvenile justice system that are on probation. And one of the kids that we were working with, he came in very jittery, and we didn't know what was going on with him. And turned out that the night before, his friend had been killed. And a lot of these kids have some gang affiliations or some background of that sort. And so he actually had the prince's monologue from Romeo and Juliet, where he sees the two households fighting, and he says, "You know, you men, you beasts, what ho, you know, stop." And so we had this kid paraphrase the language in his own words while punching a punching bag. And he said, "You know, stop the violence." And then he, and like the whole room just froze. And then he put the Shakespeare on top of it. And it was so powerful and so moving. And it, I mean, I use that example frequently because it's such a great example of putting words to this just pain and empowering this youth to do something positive about a situation where they probably feel very helpless and traumatized. So,
and when I think of the plays that y'all put on over the last 7, soon to be 8 years that you're doing this, I mean, one of the ones in 2023 got you a Jeff Award was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. So, I mean, the point is not everything is about maybe the racial issues in the city and those kind of things, because, and even Virginia Woolf is such an amazing play, but yeah, there's other issues that people deal with. I mean, for example, alcoholism and domestic abuse. And so you're basically looking for vehicles that will let us address a lot of different relevant topical issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the nice thing about heightened language is that there's still playwrights nowadays that are writing in it. I mean, we just produced Top Dog, Underdog.
Yeah.
Susan Laurie Parks, which is, I mean, she's like a modern day Shakespeare, and her and Lynn Nottage are, I think, the top of their game, top of the game now. And it's so, so incredible. So it's, you know, a specific enough mission that we can kind of, it is a bit subjective, admittedly, and subjective from my opinion, the one who's choosing the plays, but it is also specific enough that we can say, you know, this play is just a little too colloquial. It doesn't have the rhythm or the poetry to it. Whereas, you know, something like Top Dog, Underdog is written in a very, very specific poetic cadence and rhythm. So, yeah.
One Shakespearean question, because one could argue that with your passion for Shakespeare and all that, well, go get a job at Chicago Shakes. you know, I'm sure at that time, Barbara, Chris Henderson, they would have brought you in. Sure. But the point is, and other theater companies are doing Shakespeare. I guess the point is, at least, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but it's not just about doing Shakespeare. I mean, it's the Shakespeare with a message.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And it is trying to find plays, not just Shakespeare, but yes, Shakespeare plays that speak to the human experience of today. And why are we putting these shows on now? And what are our audience taking away from it? Which I think is so important. I mean, we're doing for the season, we're doing Macbeth, which is a play all about ambition and the cycles of power. And we're doing it in an election year. So, I mean,
I didn't know there was an election. No, I'm kidding.
yeah. So
by the way, will it be the and Macbeth, which opens in October of this year, Is it traditional Macbeth? You know, once in a while, Goodman will do Shakespeare. And I think Goodman senses not everybody follows Shakespeare. So they'll sort of modernize it. So are we going to get the true Macbeth, or are you going to play some games with it?
We'll do something interesting with it. Our it's actually, so not myself directing it. So Serafina Vecchio will be directing it. And we've talked about concept so far, and she has a very interesting concept. And I don't want to give it away necessarily, because I think it'll be really interesting when audiences come and see it. Very impactful. So,
well, let me just say this. If people find Shakespeare intimidating, will they enjoy your Macbeth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that Shakespeare, when it's done well, is incredibly accessible and beautiful. And I think, I mean, nothing hurts my soul more than when people say, oh, I don't like Shakespeare. Because I don't understand the language. And if it's done well, it is very intelligible. And I think Macbeth is one of the most accessible of his plays too. It has lots of beautiful heightened language, but it's pretty easy to follow what's going on.
It might go back to people's high school experiences where they were sort of forced to do things and all of that.
Yeah.
And it stays with them. Let's take a look, because I mean, the best way to talk about how you do your mission is to see how you're doing your mission. And you did begin the season with Top Dog Underdog, which I came to see. And, you know, if I were to say, oh, yeah, the main characters are Lincoln and Booth, of course, immediately they're going to say, oh, so we're getting the Abraham Lincoln story. That's not exactly what was going on stage.
No, yeah. I mean, it's just this incredibly powerful story about two brothers, and with this allegory of, or this metaphor of, Lincoln and Booth layered on top. And in the play, they refer to it, and it's their parents name them that as a joke. But of course, it is foreshadowing and for all those who are listening. But ultimately, the brother Booth kills the brother Lincoln by the end of the play. And it's sort of examining how they get to the point. And it's very funny and heartbreaking. And it's two black brothers who are experiencing this legacy of racism, but also poverty and identity, and just trying to find out who they are. And it's so interesting that they've been put into these molds of Lincoln and Booth. And so right off the bat, the audience knows, okay, this is not going to end well.
And the show is not called Lincoln Meets Booth. I mean, it is Top Dog Underdog. So right. We know from the title of the play that there is something deeper going on here.
Yes.
I thought that was so incredibly well done. And this part of the theater you used there, and it was the first time I saw anything in Windy City under Invictus. It was a very intimate, I mean, on top of the action, playing to it's designed to play to a smaller audience, but that's what you wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what we sort of built our reputation on. And Aaron Reese Bozeman, who directed, he's a company member, and he's directed several shows with us before too, and he does such beautiful work. But at our old space, it was a 30 seat theater, and you were when we did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, you were in the living room with George and Martha. And so it wasn't as immersive as Windy City Playhouse used to do, where you walked to different rooms of the house. But I mean, you were right up there in the action. And I mean, you could, if you wanted, you could get the spit of the actors all over you, as well as the sweat and tears. Yeah. So,
by the way, you mentioned Aaron Reese Bozeman, and I just always love saying this, and I mean, I know he's proud of it too, because when he's there all the time, actually, I mean, when I'm there, I run into him in so many places. But I also think it's great for the theater because he has a quite famous relative. Who I think intrigues people. So let's do a shout out for that, because it's a kind of a tip of the hat.
Yeah. His uncle is Chadwick Boseman, the known, I think, most famously for being the Black Panther, the Marvel Universe. And yeah, I actually remember when he passed, Aaron was really devastated, and Aaron will talk about him pretty openly. One of the greatest treats for us is one of the first shows that Aaron directed for us was A Raise in the Sun. And actually Chadwick actually came to one of our performances, and he came backstage and talked to the actors, and they took pictures with him. And he really enjoyed the show. I was a little too chicken to get a picture taken with him, but we have the actors who got pictures with him, and you know, they were holding up one of our posters, getting a picture with him. So I consider that a win. So
yeah. You should post some of those up in the theater. I don't think those are up.
Yeah, no, we don't. Yeah, we don't have any up.
All right. I'll help you design some things. Next up, by the way, after Top Dog Underdog, Three Sisters. And as we are talking, it is playing. I realize that. But I think by the time people see this, they may have missed that. But let's at least do a shout out to it. Three Sisters, also a classic work.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic work. just a gorgeous, gorgeous play. And we actually just got Jeff recommended as well, too. And
congratulations.
Thank you. For those who are listening, the Jeff Awards are like Chicago's version of the Tonys. And when you're Jeff recommended, it's the first step in that process towards getting nominated and winning awards for that. And actually Top Dog was also not recommended as well too. So, so far we're 2 for 2 in the new space, which I'm very proud of.
Yeah. There's some good vibes going on. And by the way, of course, Three Sisters, which is Chekhov. And I just want to talk about that for a moment because there's also a lot of people, I'm just being honest. I mean, we get to chat. We don't have 3 minutes on television. There are people who are also intimidated by a Chekhov play.
Yeah.
So what do you have to say to them who say, wait a minute, the seagull, whatever, I've seen some of this. Sometimes they're tough to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of my goals.
Harry Orchard was great, by the way, at the Goodman.
Yes, it was beautiful. Yeah. One of my goals because I directed this production was, and I understand why people say that Chekhov is boring or doesn't make sense. And because I think a lot of productions, they make it very like shoegazy and by shoegazy, I mean people literally staring at their shoes. And when they say that, and like when the characters are saying that they're bored, you know, people take that at face value. But what I really, really worked on with the actors was, you know, if they say they're bored, there's something else going on. There's despair or there's hurt or a longing or something like that. And I really, really worked to make it as physical of a production as possible. My goal was to get the actors as comfortable touching each other as they possibly could, because there's so much rich relationship in this play and all Chekhov's plays. And you just don't get that if you have the three sisters and they're, you know, standing in separate points of the stage talking at each other. Like we have them hugging each other, kissing each other, tickling each other. And it's just so much, there's so much joy on the stage. And then when the heartbreak happens, then you go, oh God, like we feel for these women experiencing this.
And the bottom line is language shouldn't be a barrier. And by that, I don't mean foreign language. I mean, we shouldn't sort of get so put off by language we're hearing. It means that and this is what you're saying. It means something isn't happening that should be happening on stage, because I should get immersed in the language and almost not pay attention that it's Shakespeare, Chekhov, because the action is so dedicated and so deep that I'm just with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul, could you be our spokesman?
Sure. I mean,
yeah. Like that's absolutely it. I agree. I think if you see one of these classic texts and if they're done well and people engage with the stakes of what's going on and they engage with the relationships, it grabs you by the gut and you can't look away. Like, because it's just so compelling. So.
Well, I have no doubt that the show that begins in August, Network by Patty Chayefsky, that, my friend, is going to, I'm going to predict, is going to be a huge play for you guys to put on for a whole host of reasons. But talk about it a little bit, because I'm going to predict this is going to be a show hard to get tickets for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I fell in love with the movie years ago when I watched it. And then I heard that there was a production of it. And one of my company members said, hey, you know, here's the script for it. For the adaptation, this was also years ago. And I was like, oh, that'd be fun to do someday. And then I of course read through it and I was like, oh my God, this is so relevant. Again, during an election year and looking at the media cycles and corporate interests that get involved with media. And, you know, can you ever really trust what you're hearing, seeing, or listening to? And especially during an election year where we've got all the attack ads and all the accusations of falsities.
And it's going to get worse.
That are going to get worse, yeah. And so I think it's so important. The messaging behind it is that there are ulterior motives behind what is being presented to you. And a lot of times the news, which I'm sure you're actually very familiar with, it's like there are personal agendas, corporate agendas that get filtered into it. You've got these corporate interest groups that have bought out media, and a lot of it's become opinion that people take as fact. And so it's so important to have a discerning eye. And of course, Network just skewers all of that. And I think Patty Chayefsky was very prophetic in his writing of that screenplay. And then Lee Hall with the adaptation of that screenplay. So I'm very excited. And on a technical level, I think it'll be challenging, but well within our capabilities. We're going to do a lot of exciting work with projections and live feed cameras. And
oh, wow.
And there's beautiful language in it too. I remember watching the movie and thinking to myself, this is like Shakespeare. Like I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore speech. It just builds into this beautiful crescendo, and it's just one after the other after the other. And so it's like Shakespeare with cameras in the newsroom.
Wow. And you just said it. For people who are like, I think I've heard it, I'm not sure. If you don't know the line, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. If you remember anything, you remember that. Yeah. And it's just that, and of course, that line is just going to be so magic. Have you cast that yet?
We are actually having auditions this weekend. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we have auditions for it. We've had company members.
Which, by the way, when people see this, it's too late. You missed the auditions.
Yes. I'm sorry for those who are listening now. but hopefully you're enjoying the show.
Right.
At that point. But yeah, we are holding auditions. It is a rather large cast as well, too. I think we're not going to cast it the way Broadway did, where they had like 21 actors, and it's like, but they also had like a restaurant on stage and just little ancillary crew people, which we will have as well, too. But it'll be a beautiful, brilliant production, but it'll be different from Ivo van Hove's as well.
So. You could make it immersive and let us eat in the restaurant.
We could. We very well could.
And by the way, will you be, again, Top Dog, Underdog used a small portion of that space. So is part of what you're doing sort of how with each production, what are we going to use? Is the expansion easy for you to do as you choose?
Yeah, I think and that's the beauty of that space. It is like a very large black box theater. So there is a lot of opportunity to be flexible with what we do with the sets. And I think especially with network, I mean, it's built in to be a news studio. And so, sorry, this is a bit of a spoiler, but my goal is when people walk in, I want them to feel like they're walking into one of those news TV studios. And our set designer, Kevin, who's brilliant, is very much on board with that.
Sounds like I better bring my badge with me so I'm allowed in.
Yeah.
I hope there's a green room I can kind of hang in there. You know, when you look at that, and we've now talked about the season since we mentioned all that, and Top Dog, Underdog, Three Sisters, Network, Macbeth, it is really hard, except when you talked about Network, you mentioned it's Shakespearean. Mm-hmm. I guess that is the underlying bridging theme, the heightened language. Because other than that, when you look at these shows being put together as a season, some might find it hard to look for the connecting thread.
Yeah, we actually, when I pick the season, I actually try to find a theme that applies to all of the shows. And so for this one, legacy was the theme. So I already said with Top Dog, there's this legacy of trauma and pain and that these brothers are experiencing. Three Sisters, their father has just died. They're now orphans and they're dealing with the legacy of the bourgeoisie in the aristocratic class in Russia and the decline of it that they've been born into. Network is looking at media legacy, and we're in the midst of it right now and the changes it's undergone since the 80s. And then, of course, Macbeth, it examines, you know, it's a play about the absence of children and how there's no one to fill the throne, which was something that in Shakespeare's time, they were very concerned about, even though King James was on the throne. But prior to him ascending, Queen Elizabeth died without an heir. So everyone was worried about civil war and disruption and what could happen.
Since you're the guy that picks the plays, and I'd like to suggest that we do Fiddler on the Roof next season, I'll be with you. But what, I mean, because some places it's the committee, it's the whatever, but I'm, from what you said, you're the guy. So as you look ahead to a new season, is the world your oyster? Or do you start by saying, I've got some parameters here and let's see what is available for those. You look to Broadway, you look to off-Broadway, you look to classics. Well,
yeah.
How does this work?
Yeah, well, we start with the Shakespeare show. So every season we will do a Shakespeare show. And that's our fall Shakespeare show. And that's kind of the cornerstone. And then we pick themes from that show and how they connect to other plays and go from there. And I'm not the only one that's like, we're going to do these plays. I actually get a lot of input from our company and from our board as well too. And I hear suggestions and thoughts about seasons and I'm very open to those and amenable to those. I mean, like I said, Network was a suggestion from one of our company members. As was Top Dog, Underdog as well, too. So I do take what they say very seriously and incorporate that into our season. So
it sounds like the season begins with a corner piece Shakespeare play, right, from which the themes involved will then feed the rest of the season. It doesn't sound like you're saying this season's, because, you know, you look at Goodman or Steppenwolf, and there is an overall a theme to the season that then they find the plays to fit in. It sounds like you start with a Shakespeare as your cornerstone.
Correct. Correct. And then we find the themes in that. And then we pick the plays based on that. And it's, again, a bit subjective. And so it's a lot like writing an essay and saying, this is why this play fits this theme, and making an argument for it. It's a little malleable sometimes, but I think we did a good job of it this season and previous seasons too.
You're a smaller theater company.
Yes.
Some of the shows you're doing scream big budget to me, like Network. I mean, going to be a lot of rent and stuff going on, and I don't know. But so I guess two questions. How do you balance in, as you create a season, how do you balance in the budget limitations you might have, or as opposed to saying, I'm not going to worry about budget limitations, we're going to find what we need to make this happen. Is it the commercial versus the artistic components of a season? You're the artistic director. You have to wrestle with those two things.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. And I create, I mean, I think I had like for this season, 15 or 16 drafts of the budget that we went through with the board. When I pick a show, I don't want to think about the budget limitations with the show. I just want to say, this show is great. We will figure out creative ways to have it fit the budget. The nice thing about the Windy City Playhouse and leasing that space there is that all the toys and gadgets that they had in that space, of which it was quite plentiful, are at our disposal. So we've sort of jumped almost 5-10 years in the future, tech-wise and materials-wise and resources-wise. You know, at the end of the day, then our budgets are really going towards, you know, how much can we pay our actors? How can we keep increasing that? Not just our actors, but our artists, and maybe start paying a staff salary as well too. And because we've got so many materials at the Windy City Playhouse already at our disposal. That's not to say that we don't purchase ancillary things, but we've got a lot already built in there.
Well, when you say that, do you mean, Amy, because you're right, you could have walked into just this big blank empty space with nothing. Yeah. Clearly you have the seats, that kind of thing, but are you saying, is it that they left scenery and props and that kind of thing? Or are you saying, no, they left us an infrastructure of seating and curtains and...
Yeah, no, they left us like some amazing lighting and sound equipment and props and scenic and costume items. And we reached an agreement with them in our lease that we could use it for our productions. And I think she was only too happy to have us do so.
Talk to me about Chicago audiences. I always like to bring this up, certainly when out of town people come here, because I just know what the answer is when I ask it. I mean, for you know, people that come in out of town who are actors, they're like, there's no audiences, no theater like Chicago. And even though some people would say that's not true in New York, my view of New York, and I love New York, but those are tourist audiences. We are not tourist audiences.
Yeah, no, I would say that Chicago is much more community based. The community is, at least in my experience, and I think for the bigger institutions like Chicago Shakes or Steppenwolf or Goodman, they may attract more of the tourist crowd, but they also, I think, have a very strong community based following, and I think that's how the storefronts survive in Chicago is the neighborhoods around them. But then there is, I think, more of a commitment to theaters. But it had, I mean, COVID changed things a lot. And so it's very different. And so it's kind of hard to answer that question because I don't know. We're still young, and, you know, we don't have 20 years prior to COVID to know what the audiences were like. We only have about 3 or 4. And then, you know, we have post COVID. So we're kind of figuring it out.
Well, that's actually a great question. I mean, I try not to bring COVID up anymore because we try and put it behind us. But
sure.
You're right. You weren't around all that long when it hit. And you know as well as me that there were some other longtime established theater companies, not just in Chicago, everywhere, that couldn't survive it. How did Invictus survive that as strongly as you did?
I don't know. We got really lucky. We got very, very, very lucky. We honestly just finished. We were doing Raisin in the Sun. And that closed mid-March. And like the day after, the city started shutting down. And we were itinerant, so we didn't have any overhead. We were able to do virtual programming. And then we actually came out of it with that space on Thorndale. We had some grant money. And fortunately, a lot of foundations and donors, you know, they would donate for specific programming or for the season. And, you know, with COVID, I think a lot of them just said, you know, keep it, you'll need it. And so we were just kind of sitting on this chunk of change that gave us enough to move into our own venue.
Is it the virtual program, by the way, because I looked at your website, I didn't see that. Is it still available for people who want to watch it? Maybe I missed it.
We had done a production of Night Mother. At the time, and it was amazing what we did. We had
Kathy Bates join in?
No, unfortunately, she didn't. I wish. We actually had a board member who is super tech savvy. And what we did is we actually sent tablets over to the actors' houses, as well as scenic and prop pieces. And we were able to make their houses look like they were in the same house. And we could actually cut to different cameras on the different tablets while the live show was going on. We do have I can't say that. We according to the licensing, we can't be sharing the show out with anybody unless we purchase more licensing rights for the show.
But when you did it, they were like, so you didn't create the production that people would then watch when they wanted. Was it something people that it was live at 7 o'clock or whatever it was? And you were doing it while people were watching it live.
Exactly. Yeah. We were doing it while people were watching.
That's a challenge.
Yes. Yeah. But very exciting. And so you get that sort of dynamism of the theater. I think it's sort of like those old teleplays that they used to do again, where they would cut to like camera two or camera three or what. So yeah, I thought it was a huge success, and it was really, really fun to do.
So are you already looking to new season? I mean, this season's underway. It'll run, and Macbeth is going to run through December, but there's no way we can be sitting here mid-year and you're not thinking of 25, 26.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. We definitely have a season. I'm actually this week looking to start scheduling and applying for rights for the shows. So I can't say what it is yet.
But wanted to break some news with you.
yeah.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
With what you can say, will it be there the traditional Shakespeare show of some kind, and where there'll be a Broadway tied show of some kind?
So a little bit of yes, assuming that we get our licensing wish list. And actually, by the time people are listening to this, they'll know what our season is, I imagine. But there is,
they're listening and they're also watching. So I should tell you that.
Oh, listening and watching. Perfect.
Yes.
I think when people listen and watch this in the future, I mean, they'll know, but there's one play in particular that I think for one thing hasn't been done in a long time in Chicago. And I think people will be very excited, that we're doing it. So again, I can't say too much cause we don't have the rights for it yet. But we're working on it this week.
It's Fiddler on the Roof, isn't it?
You got me, Paul.
I just keep asking everybody to do that. I don't know. It's already memorized. I'm just ready to go right on stage. Yeah, and do that. And will Windy City Playhouse continue to be your home for the unlimited future?
For at least the next 2 years. So we have a lease for 3 years. And then after that, we will renegotiate something with Amy. My ultimate dream and goal would be to purchase that building. I would love to have an institution, have a home, a permanent home for Invictus. And I think that is not just as good a place as any, but a really, really wonderful venue for us to call home.
And again, looking at your website and studying that, it looks like the board is relatively small. You don't have a million people on the board doing things, but you also have an ensemble that's tied to Invictus of you know, well-known local people, but it's also not a huge ensemble like we might see at Goodman or Steppenwolf or, you know, Looking Glass or whatever. So it's you're always allowed, it seems to me like you always want there to be opportunities to bring in people who were not previously with Invictus.
Yeah, absolutely. I and our company members, generally we bring them in and we kind of detail company. It's a little different than an ensemble, but we detail it as it's sort of like board member light. So they have to volunteer 30 hours a year. And yes, they get preference when it comes to artistic opportunities, administrative opportunities. But to remain competitive with our programming, we don't guarantee anyone anything. But, you know, they have the first crack at anything. And generally, to become a company member, you have to have done 3 shows with us because we gotta get to know you a little bit before we're going to bring you into our house. And so...
And once they become a company member, are they part of the artistic process in general, or they're just first on the list to be cast if you decide you need them?
They get first. So we actually hold separate company auditions before anybody else gets a chance to audition for the shows. And at that time, the director can say yay or nay. They can also give feedback to company members, which is something we don't give to the general public. And then the company, they are allowed to come to the general auditions as well as the callbacks as well too. So they get three shots at getting cast in the show, which is something that the general public does not get. So they've got more of an advantage than most people. And it's a preference. So when it comes down to a company member or an outside person, the company member gets the role.
So slipping you a 20 is not a bad thing for me to try. It's Chicago, Charles.
Right.
And by the way, who does the casting? Is it primarily you?
So we actually have just recently started hiring a casting director, Becca Holloway, and she does casting for the Factory Theater and Red Theater, which are two other storefront theaters. I think Factory's been around for a long time, and I think Red actually has too. And so she's become our casting director, and she's wonderful. She's very organized and efficient. But ultimately, yes, for any shows that we're casting, I am in the room, and I do have the final say, but I do defer a lot to what the director wants.
And to use a dramaturg, there's a great line in Steppenwolf's Thanksgiving play, if you've seen that. It's really amazing if you haven't seen it. It's hysterical. Yeah. But there's a line when somebody says, I want to be a dramaturg, and somebody else yells, what is that? He goes, nobody knows.
We have started using dramaturgs. They're very useful. Actually, Steve Nordmark was our dramaturg for Three Sisters, as well as Network. And what they do is they sort of give facts and information about the play. For instance, with Three Sisters, we had a question: how did people go to the bathroom at that time? Like, it's such a, you know, such a thing of living your life, but it's like, what did they do? What are they
and
doing?
I'm not sure I want to know the answer, to be honest.
No, yeah, no, you don't.
Charles Askenizer, the founding artistic director of Invictus Theater. The website is invictustheaterco.com, right? And theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. Always love that. I really look forward to seeing more with your theater and watching you grow. What you do is tremendous, and congratulations. And people can go to your website. They can donate. They can check it out. And most importantly, go visit you at the Playhouse at Irving Park. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.